Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So, Susan, this is one of two or three reports annually that I think everyone in the compliance community looks forward to. And we use both for an educational to benchmark and maybe see what we can improve on going down the road.
This is Tom Fox. I'd like to welcome you to the award-winning FCPA Compliance Report. In this edition, I visit with Susan Divers, Director of Thought Leadership at LRN, on the firm's 2023 Compliance Effectiveness Report. It's a wealth of information that I know you'll want to utilize in your program going forward. As always, we link to the full report in the show notes, so I would encourage you to check out the full report. The FCPA Compliance Report is a production of the Compliance Podcast Network. First, a quick message from our sponsor. Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox back for another episode, and you're in for a real treat today because I get to visit, and actually we get to visit with Susan Divers about the LRN 2023 Ethics and Compliance Program Effectiveness Report. Susan and I have visited about this report multiple times over the years, and as always, it's a great report. So with that incredibly long-winded introduction, first of all, welcome back, Susan.
Thank you, Tom. It's always great to spend time with you.
So, Susan, this is one of two or three reports annually that I think everyone in the compliance community looks forward to, and we use both for an educational to benchmark and maybe see what we can improve on going down the road. So with that in mind, I was wondering if we could start off with some of the highlights that you and your team at LRN found that went into got into this year's report.
Sure. So, Tom, interestingly, the questions we asked this year, we shifted them somewhat, and you had an influence on that because you and I have talked about the changing risk situation and that now with the war in the Ukraine, the tensions with China, I just saw that Huawei may be banned as a supplier by the Biden administration. And what's going on with Iran and other places, there are increasing demands on companies' compliance teams to make sure that they stay compliant with regulations. So there's no going back to sort of pre-pandemic, you know, everything is fine and we just kind of continue improving our program. There are real life challenges out there that compliance teams need to meet. So what we saw this year in particular, I guess I'd call out three things. One is that, as you know, we ranked programs. We had about close to 1,900 respondents worldwide, and we ranked them according to our index, which is all explained in the report, by high-performing, mid-level, and then less impactful programs. And what we saw is that there's a greater gulf than ever between high-performing and less effective programs. And it's particularly in two areas. One is high-performing programs are very focused on making their programs engaging and easy to use for employees. So they're really employee facing. I think perhaps in the past, there is a tendency to say, here's a policy, read it. It may be very hard to read and it may be written in legalese, but that's your problem. Or, you know, here's the training and it's an hour long lecture on the intricacies of antitrust law, which even as lawyers, that could be pretty mind numbing for us. And I think the pandemic forced people to sort of rethink that a bit. And so we see much more focus on making things employee friendly, whether it's training or having a searchable code or simplifying policies and making them searchable. And then the other area that won't surprise you is data analytics. We see that high-performing programs are very focused on determining the effectiveness of their program using analytics. We just reinvented our entire platform. It's now called Inspire 2.0. And we really enhanced our analytics. We think they're the best that you can get out there. They look at patterns in trading trends, whether it's subjects that people fail more than others, time spent taking a particular training course, results on end of course surveys, learner feedback. We've even embedded a small culture pulse survey at the end of certain courses that you can ask your employees to take. It's 10 questions, and it gives you a quick insight into what the sentiment is in terms of issues like respect and integrity in the workforce. So, you know, data and using data rather than activities to chart how you're doing is really a big deal. But then, somewhat surprisingly, we also found that our respondents were pretty evenly distributed across the world, found that most programs responded pretty much the same. It didn't really matter where they were. We saw the one exception to that was in Japan. Programs generally scored lower and reported sort of less use of best practices. But other than that, it's pretty clear that a global standard for program excellence has kind of come together.
Susan, one of the things that struck me about the report was an almost evolution, maybe that's not the right word, but how compliance perhaps responded to the pandemic. I think in 2020, you and I both observed, and we saw in the report, the 2021 report, concerns about values, culture, really during the height of the work from home. That's modified a little bit with either remote work or returning to the office, but a lot of concern about how do we keep our employees engaged from the compliance perspective. And it looks like almost independent of people like you and me, corporations really turned inward to their own values. And so I was really struck by this year, companies saying they were relying more on values than, I don't want to say old compliance rules and regulations, but perhaps how we did compliance or thought about compliance pre-pandemic. And it almost seemed to me this was an organic change because corporations had to because of our work situation in 2020 and early 2021. But I think you and I over the years have tried to talk about we need to inculcate more values. And it seems like this report showed that that's actually working. Would that be a fair assessment from what you all found?
Absolutely, Tom. And this is the third year we've seen those results. So it wasn't an anomaly when we first looked at this two reports ago. And I think that's a fair characterization that companies looked inward and relied on values. And I'll give you one very stark example. In our 2020 report, we talk about Braskem North America, which is an energy grid supplier, and their employees volunteered to isolate in plants at the height of the pandemic for up to a month at a time to keep the grid going. Now, you and I both know you can't force people to do that. There's no rule or law that says you have to leave your family for a month at a time of great anxiety and stress and go live in a plant. But employees did it, and they kept the grid going. And there are many other stories like that. And in contrast, look at what happened with Foxconn in China at the Apple phone plant, where Chinese authorities basically locked people in the plant, and people were screaming at the windows and trying to escape. So I think that's as dramatic an example as you can get of the difference between the power of rules and the power of values. And I think that's a business insight, not just an ethics and compliance insight, as you say.
There was a couple of other things that struck me, one of which was the engagement of leadership, particularly senior leadership. But then I saw a bit of a drop-off when we moved to middle management. So I think it's certainly positive when we see engagement levels that you guys showed over, well over 50%. But it also shows us some opportunities for enhancement at middle management. And one of the things I know we've talked about over the years is how do you engage middle managers? But I think the numbers really bear out that we really need to focus on that. But I'd like you to speak to maybe what you saw around senior management engagement and how we can use the numbers you guys saw around middle management to enhance that part of our culture and compliance program.
Well, that's a good insight too, Tom. And that's the third year we've seen that gap. And again, it's the third year we've asked about the response of senior leaders to the pandemic. And they relied on values, and they continue to rely on values for business decisions. And so, you know, that's, as you mentioned, that's just a great development, and it's organic. I think we've speculated as to what the issues are with middle managers. And I think it's possible that in the wake of the pandemic, there were so many challenges with remote work, people isolating, trying to get people to be able to use company systems for meetings or whatever. I mean, there's a lot to sort out, as well as keeping the business going. So it may have been that they just weren't as focused on ethics and compliance or values as we would have liked. But we're continuing to see that gap. And so I think it points to the need to really empower middle managers and involve them more in ethics and compliance. And like one of the features of our enhanced platform is a manager's dashboard where with a few clicks, you can see how your team or how your group or how your segment is doing in terms of their training and what topics they're struggling with. It really increases visibility and transparency into ethics and compliance. And I think that's a good thing, no matter which way you do it.
Susan, the next section was titled ENC Programs Are Impactful When It Matters. When I read this, the sense I got out of it, though, was that corporate values are driving business decisions, and people are either incorporating their own values into business decisions or raising concerns or raising their hand and speaking up, but that compliance programs are working. But I'm going to tie it back into the values discussion we had a little bit earlier, that it seems that organically, I don't want to congratulate compliance programs because I see values in there, but compliance program may be the mechanism by which they can put that value into a business decision. Did I see that right or wrong?
Yeah, you did see that correctly. And that's what they should do. As you and I know, when compliance programs first started, it was sort of the rules department, and it was often a quarter of the legal department, and nobody went there, you know, unless they really liked going to the dentist or root canal. Compliance ENC professionals and people like you deserve a lot of credit for saying this should be the focal point for ethical culture. This should be a key focal point for determining who we are as a company. And that's not whether we say nice things. That's whether we make tough decisions and decisions that are in accord with our values. And the pandemic, one of the unexpected benefits of that, I think, is that companies did that. I hear very few negative stories about company behavior during the pandemic. I hear inspiring stories. I think it was HP was talking about how they really addressed issues of employee bandwidth so that kids could do online learning. Dell moved big chunks of their compliance program onto our Catalyst app, including figuring out how to move their hotline onto Catalyst app because they figured out that employees were fighting for computer time and bandwidth at home. And so, you know, those are real decisions. And the more you sort of make real decisions like that and see the benefits of doing it, the easier it can get. And not to mention, I mean, the report does talk about regulators and the emphasis on personal responsibility and the need to make sure that companies are accountable when things go wrong for things done by executives and whoever.
We always have a category of things we could do better on.
Right.
The importance, I think, of that is just that, things that as an industry we really could do better on. But the thing I hope a compliance professional reading this report will see is they may feel like they're siloed and really everyone else is doing much better than them, and they really can't reach out to their peers. But I think this grouping really shows some of the challenges across the board, so that I hope the compliance professional listening to this or reading the report will say, yeah, I can reach out. I can get some help from LRN. I can call Susan. I can call Tom, or I can call another CCO. But the challenges kind of break down into funding, both physical resources and headcount. Compliance as the land of Dr. No, populating the land of no. A couple of others. So I was wondering if you might give a few thoughts about some of these ongoing challenges. And the other thing that struck me was the first one, which was many companies have upgraded or rather started or enhanced their programs in the early 2010s, mid-2010s. Well, that's now 10 to 5 years ago, and it's really time for an upgrade, particularly around the data component that you've talked about. Are we at sort of an inflection point where companies need to really upgrade their controls as well?
Absolutely. It surprised me. We asked the question, which statements best describe the biggest obstacles to improving your E&C program impact and effectiveness in the past 12 months? And number one was internal systems need upgrading to facilitate better training, web-based resources, and data collection. And I see that in my practice at LRN. The companies I work with are terrific companies, and they're committed to effective ethics and compliance programs, and they have terrible, many of them, if not most, have absolutely terrible systems. I was on the phone with a Fortune 10 a couple of weeks ago, and their LMS is just an obstacle in the road to rolling out better analytics, more employee engagement, or even tying it to communications and all. So I really think we are at an inflection point. I think it's kind of a good analogy might be that we've seen in the IT systems area that we have to keep improving firewalls and anti-hacking and anti-phishing procedures, and we have to invest in that infrastructure. Well, the time has come to invest in the E&C area in terms of data and platform, because, as you know, regulators are very focused on that. And if you have to go in and explain why you have an effective program, and you don't have reasonable or helpful or useful data analytics showing that your program is impactful, you could be in real trouble. And secondly, it really helps with budget shortages and with staff shortages if you have a platform that can do many things for you and can take the tedious tasks of following up and reminding and collating and analyzing data and have it there, you know, with two clicks. I think that's definitely an inflection point that we're seeing.
You know, I hate to reduce this report to a trite phrase, but the trite phrase I'm going to use, you guys used in it, which was meeting employees where they are. And that is one of the key criteria or key indicia of an effective compliance program, and indeed one that's very well run. And so that, Susan, actually seemed to me to almost sum up most of the results that I saw in here, that companies are not sitting in their ivory towers, obviously on high. They're meeting the employees where they are. And it's not simply with training and communications. It's giving the employees tools to make decisions or raise their hand when they need to. Senior management is engaged with employees. The board of directors are engaged with employees. So it really struck me that that phrase really seemed to sum up the positive findings of this year and even the things that we can do better. And I was wondering if we might conclude with your thoughts on the importance of literally meeting the employees where they are.
Oh, I think it's absolutely critical, Tom. I think the old view of compliance programs was, you know, giant checklists and, hey, we're good. You know, we trained 4,000 people last year and we updated our code. Yeah, so what? You can still, you know, have a major meltdown. You can still be Airbus, or you can still be Wells Fargo. So being able to reach employees and help them and also extend to them the trust and respect that if they have the right tools and information, they will do the right thing. I mean, rules aren't self-executing, but values are self-executing in that they provide a guidepost for people and inspiration and freedom to do the right thing. So I think, again, going back to that Braskem versus Foxconn example, which I think is so stark, if you sort of make your program focused on employees and an ally and a coach rather than a cop, you get the kind of engagement and even heroism that you saw. And it wasn't just Braskem. There were a number of companies where employees volunteered to do that. And that kind of superb performance, as opposed to literally locking people forcibly in their factories and having them, you know, highly distressed as a result. I think we are in a good place that way. And it's very inspiring.
Susan, unfortunately, we are near the end of our time for this episode. But before we leave, I was wondering if our listeners wanted to get a copy of the report or find out any more about some of the topics or LRN, topics we've touched on today or LRN, what would be the best place for them to go?
If they go on our website, the report is now live on the website. If you just type in Program Effectiveness Report 2023, it should pop right up. Or you can just email me at susan.divers@lrn.com. I'd be happy to send it.
And we're going to link to it in the show notes. So, Susan, I wanted to thank you again for taking the time.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
With me. Please thank the LRN team for, once again, this great report for 2023.
Thank you, Tom. Always a pleasure to see you. Take care.
This is Tom Fox again. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the FCPA Compliance Report. I'd like to give a shout out to our new production partner, Podflow, who helped in the audio production of this podcast. If you would like more information on the topic Susan and I discussed, I hope you'll check out the full 2023 LRN report on compliance program effectiveness. We've linked to it in the show notes. It's a great piece of information for you, your compliance team, and your corporation going forward. I hope you'll join us again next week, where we have a very special guest, Eric Young, who is going to talk with me about changes in CCO stature within an organization. I know you'll enjoy our next report.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.